Well, hello there. Welcome to The Story of Us. I'm your host, Jeff Ellison. I want to thank you for tuning in and listening to us today. I also want to thank those that took the time to listen to our trailer and recognize that we use that to help us edit and understand the technology and try to produce the best content we can for you. So, special shout out to my good friend, Haley Spears. She took a lot of time to help me edit that first post, and I want to really thank her for that. Here at The Story of Us, we believe your stories matter. They're important. And we're going to start recording those for history. But before we dig in and begin that journey, I want to set the table a little bit here. And this podcast is going to be a little different than some of the ones to come through. So, before we get started, I invite you to close your eyes. Relax your jaw. Ease the tension in your forehead. Let those shoulders fall. Take a long, slow, deep breath. In through the nose and out through the mouth. Let your breathing flow as it normally would. Now focus your attention on it. Pause for a hot second. Just become aware of the thoughts currently racing through your mind. Disengage with those thoughts. Recognize the cluttered mess and allow it to float off like clouds in a beautiful clear sky. Let's take another deep breath. In for 4 beats and out for 8. Clear your mind. Okay. Open your eyes because now you're ready. So let's begin. So I have a question. Does anyone else carry with them a heavy knapsack of worry, anxiety, and unease, or is it just me? Do any of you sense that the Earth and all its inhabitants are trapped inside a giant pressure cooker poised to explode at any time? If you do, I understand how you feel. You're not alone in your suffering. Billions of others feel the same way you do, and for a really good reason. We're literally packed on top of this planet like a bunch of canned sardines. The earliest known humans emerged on the scene around 300,000 years ago, and for much of human history, the population was relatively stable. Estimates suggest that around 180 million people inhabited this planet in 1 CE. It took another 1,800 years to reach 1 billion people. Then, cue the Barry White soundtrack, we got it on. Procreation rocketed in the 1800s. Population doubled in only 123 years between 1804 and 1923. We reached 3 billion people in 1960, doubled again in the next 39 years to 6 billion people, and hit the 8 billion mark in 2022. The UN estimates that the population will grow, reaching around 9 billion by 2037 and 10 billion by 2057. It's crazy. Modern humans are undoubtedly the most evasive and ecocentric species the Earth has ever accommodated. If you feel like you're jostling for space in a global mosh pit, it's because you are. And it's not just that there are a shit ton of us on this tiny ball hurtling through space. Take a moment. Ponder what it really feels like living in the year 2025 Anno Domini. So, we're bombarded with lethal doses of information. Humans today are flooded with data. It's simply too much information for a reasonable human to digest. Making matters worse, the rapid spread of misinformation, disinformation, and false information, which is amplified by the algorithms fueling digital platforms, is undermining our trust in our institutions and in each other. It's making us distrust each other and just about everything that we see. It's escalating societal tensions. Humans can no longer hold the meaningful conversations that are the lifeblood of healthy democracies. Polarization is paralyzing us as a species, and not just in the U.S., but across the globe. Our deepening political and social divides, they're eroding the cohesion necessary for collective action. And all of this at a time when the Earth needs us more than ever. We're living in a world still fighting ancient geopolitical conflicts. Humans remain locked in ongoing conflict and protracted wars over myths and stories that were narrated in heavily edited telephone game style. Over 1,700 years ago, we hold tight to these original stories because religion has given us no way to amend them. As the times and circumstances change, God simply didn't grant us the power to add an 11th or 12th amendment to the Ten Commandments. We're trapped in a corner. The mythologies of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam have been passed down to us from antiquity and are still stoking the fires of hatred, not just in the modern cities of Mesopotamia, but in the Americas, Europe, and throughout the world. Humans by nature are grand storytellers, and we hold tight to the notion that our story is the true story. So much so that we're ready to kill each other to protect the truth. Climate change. Climate change is no longer a distant threat, but a present reality. Immediate and coordinated global action is essential to safeguard our planet's future. Science has somehow become politicized. So if you identify as a conservative, you may choose to disagree with this, but scientific projections indicate that without significant coordinated mitigation efforts, the planet's on track to exceed the critical 1.5 degrees Celsius warming threshold within the next two decades. We're living in the hottest decade in the Earth's history, and it's progressively getting warmer. We face rising sea levels and unprecedented coastal threats. Weather is becoming more extreme, including stifling heat waves, megastorms, historical floods, and prolonged droughts. Our fragile ecosystem is faltering. The loss of biodiversity is really alarming. And water scarcity? It's intensifying, with over 5 billion people projected to face water shortages by the year 2050. 5 billion people. Climate-induced displacement is also becoming a significant global issue. And by 2050, the number of climate refugees attempting to migrate is forecasted to soar to an estimated 1.2 billion people. We can't change this trajectory while siloed in echo chambers. We got to find ways to have real, meaningful conversations. The cataclysmic rise of artificial intelligence, it's hit us like a tsunami. AI poses a range of potential threats to humanity, some already present and others more speculative, but very plausible as these systems grow more powerful and impossible to contain. Throughout history, major technological advances brought change at a much slower rate. Humans were able to adapt. This isn't true for AI. We're already overwhelmed and feeling the impacts. Most of us don't even understand the basics of this technology, but the emerging algorithms are nonetheless controlling our lives, the ways we communicate, and the decisions that we make on the daily. Our brains can't fathom the realism of machine-generated deepfakes. Systems trained on biased data are reinforcing social inequities in hiring, policing, healthcare, and lending. Automation of routine and even skilled tasks is just beginning to affect unemployment or underemployment in some sectors. Our privacy is eroding. AI is enabling mass surveillance and data exploitation at an unprecedented scale. The long-term consequences are unknown, but they include the real possibility of autonomous weaponry that can make kill decisions without human oversight. They include massive amounts of wealth generated by those with AI superiority that leads to deeper economic inequality, social unrest, and huge power imbalances. Loss of human control when advanced AI elects to pursue goals misaligned with human values. Bad actors, terrorists, rogue states, and criminal networks. For those that understand even the basics of AI, this is all easy to imagine. Our societies are in a fragile state of disrepair and on the verge of collapse. And I feel like AI is poised to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I don't think it has to, but it might. We're also running out of the juice that's going to power the 21st century. The current energy crisis is a complex global challenge driven by a messy combination of geopolitical conflicts, climate change agendas, aging and overpopulated, overburdened power grids, and the painfully slow transition to an integration of clean renewable energy sources. Scientists project we will run ourselves dry of our oil reserves in less than 50 years. 50 years. Humanity stands right now at a crossroads. Either we need to accelerate the clean energy transition intelligently and equitably, or remain caught in the current cycle of crisis, inequality, and environmental damage. Today's energy crisis is not just a technical challenge. It's a test of political will, cooperation, and long-term vision. Humans have picked a really bad time to divide and not conquer. We need real conversation around plans to modernize and expand our power grids. We need to cooperate globally to raise the capital necessary for massive investment in renewable infrastructure. And we need to accelerate deployment of energy storage. If not, the future is going to be characterized by unimaginable increases in prices for electricity, food, and goods. Inflation and the cost of living will go way up. Progress will slow down or stop. And energy poverty, which is a thing, will affect our health, education, and even our productivity. So, dare I continue? Or why don't we take a few more meditative breaths before we gain some much-needed perspective? You with me? Okay. In for four. Out for eight. Okay, rinse and repeat as necessary. You know, when the weight of the challenges that we face together as humanity seem too large of a cross to bear, I think it's therapeutic to find a comfortable chair, clear my mind, and meditate on how small and inconsequential our petty human squabbles are in the grand design of the known universe. The exact measures of time and space are virtually impossible for us to wrap our little Homo sapien brains around, but I'll tell you what, let's give it a try. So, our best guess is that the known universe is, say, 14 billion years old. Okay, so give or take a few hundred million years, depending on whose data you trust. Contemplating this amount of time is just about unattainable. Our brains anchor on our lifespan of, say, less than 100 years. We perceive the passing of mere decades as monumental. Remember the 1950s? Boy, weren't those just the good old days, way back 75 years ago? The age of the universe and the incredible distances between celestial bodies can only begin to be understood by humans through storytelling. So, let me tell you a story. Picture an alien civilization peering down on Earth through very impressive binoculars just at the edge of our solar system, 200 light years away. That span, that distance, based on the way that life travels, due to the time it would take for the images to reach their vision, they'd be entertained by watching our species discover Antarctica, create the first railroads, take the first photograph, and sit around grand salons in goofy powdered wigs listening to the hip new sounds of Beethoven. Crazy, huh? Another way of trying to wrap your head around time and space is to visualize the chronology of the universe through the cosmic calendar. This was popularized in the 1970s by the late, great Carl Sagan. In this visualization, the Big Bang took place at the beginning of January 1 at the stroke of midnight, and the current moment maps to the end of December 31st, just before midnight. So at this scale, there are 438 years per cosmic second, 1.5 million years per cosmic hour, and almost 38 million years per cosmic day. 38 million years represents one day. The Milky Way was formed in March. For Earthlings, it was kind of a boring summer, but in September, finally, the Earth was formed when dust and gas gradually clumped together due to gravity. So, just in time for the holidays. Humans finally made it on the scene with 8 minutes left before the ball dropped in Times Square. 8 cosmic minutes in a cosmic year. And look what we've done. Contemplate all that we have achieved in just those 8 seconds. But ask yourself this: how big, bold, and beautiful are we really in the grand Creator's big scheme? The author John McPhee has a great quote, and I'll read it to you. So with your arms spread wide to represent all time on earth, look at one hand with its line of life. The Cambrian begins in the wrist, and the Permian extinction is at the outer end of the palm. All of the Cenozoic is a fingerprint, and in a single stroke with a medium grain nail file, you could eradicate human history. It's wild. In 1977, so this was 48 years ago, on a day very close to my birthday, NASA launched the Voyager 1 space probe in hopes of exploring the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, as well as what is known as the interstellar medium. You know, remarkably, Voyager 1 is still out there somewhere, traveling at a speed of over 38,000 miles per hour. According to NASA, this hunk of man-made metal is still hurtling toward the edge of infinity and is about 14.5 billion miles from Earth, give or take a few miles. So now, let's close our eyes again and picture the Earth as it was seen from Voyager 1, as it finally exited our solar system long ago in the way-off year 1990. While we were jamming in our new Honda Accords to Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe, celebrating the fall of the Berlin Wall and trying to figure out where to get our hands on those elusive Patty the Platypus bean babies, Voyager turned around and basically took a selfie. At this time, and from that vantage point, Earth appeared as a tiny blue speck nearly 4 billion miles away. We know this because the image referred to as the pale blue dot was transmitted back for us all to contemplate on. Carl Sagan saw it, and he quoted this: "Look again at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and every destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every quote-unquote superstar, every quote-unquote supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived here, on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam." Now, forgot to tell you, you can open your eyes. But open your eyes now and take a look around with fresh, clear vision. We're so close to the Earth that sometimes we forget the profound beauty it holds. Seen from space, our planet appears remarkably vibrant, a living paradise, delicately suspended in the overwhelming vastness of the cosmos. During Apollo 11's historic journey to the moon in that turbulent year of 69, astronauts reported being deeply and profoundly moved to witness Earth rise above the moon's barren horizon. They called this the overview effect, and it's a shift in awareness that results from viewing our planet in orbit or the lifeless blank canvas of the lunar surface. To date, no other planet's been discovered that harbors life as we know it. Now, we're pretty confident there's got to be life out there based on the data. But to date, no other planet's been discovered with life. Billions of people navigate their lives on this small planet. Each life is filled with joy, happiness, but also profound, deep suffering. Reports from human space travelers reveal that they often spend their precious free moments gazing in awe at the breathtaking sight of Earth far below. From that distance, it resembles a single, majestic, living and breathing organism. I know it doesn't feel like that, but from that view, it does. One of the astronauts, Ed Mitchell, is quoted as saying, "In outer space, you develop an instant global consciousness, a people orientation, an intense dissatisfaction with the state of the world, and a compulsion to do something about it. From out there on the moon, international politics looks pretty petty. You want to grab a politician by the scruff of the neck and drag him a quarter of a million miles out and say, 'Look at that. We went to the moon as technicians. We returned as humanitarians.'" So, here we are. In the year 2025, anxious over the future and ruminating on our collective past, a past that really is but a minuscule tick of a second hand on God's little wristwatch. In that time, we have evolved from apes, we've domesticated fire, created our first alphabet, and organized societies around the stories we tell to disseminate information and help us better understand the world. Stories that seem to give life purpose and answer the big questions like, why are we all here? And what does it all mean? Stories about Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, epic tales like the Trojan War and the adventures of Odysseus. We tell tales of the end of the world and battles between gods and giants. Odin, Thor, and the Norse mythologies. Our Egyptian ancestors weaved rich, colorful yarns about the afterlife, the creation of the world, and the roles of their forgotten deities like Ra and Osiris, Isis and Anubis. Their gods once had a hand in maintaining cosmic order, but it seems like they've vanished from our collective imagination and have been replaced with new state-of-the-art gods. The Celtics, they gave us tales of magic and the supernatural, heroes slaying monsters, fairies, and leprechauns. We tell epic narratives still with Buddhist influence and Japanese Shinto beliefs. We recall stories that were adaptations of Greek myths just to fit Roman cultural values, stories of Jupiter, Juno, and Neptune. For some of us, the four-armed Vishnu maintains the universe and ensures balance and harmony. But for others, the truth is the story of the Son of God, born from a virgin and delivered to earth to wash away the sins of humanity. His birthday, conveniently chosen, mind you, to replace pagan festivals celebrating the winter solstice and the return of the sun, etc. Some people believe the collection of, say, 600 to 800 short stories that we call the Holy Bible, but some people believe only season one, the Old Testament, but elect not to believe season two, the New Testament. Maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's because readers feel the original authors jumped the shark when they elected to turn water into wine or raise old Lazarus from the dead. I'm not really sure. But even today, people are fighting over amended versions of that same tale, waging wars and killing in the name of that particular edition that they choose to believe. Now, somehow, my boy Abraham remains a central cast member across all seasons, but we'll talk about that later. So Christianity was born out of Judaism. So Islam recognizes Jesus as a prophet and a messenger of God, but not the divine. That role is reserved for Muhammad. This all seems more complicated than, say, the recoupling in season four of Love Island, and it seems much harder to understand. The work of the great American writer and mythologist Joseph Campbell has been a huge influence on the story of us. His life was devoted to helping humanity understand that all of our stories contain a common narrative that is shared by all world mythologies, from antiquity to present day. Campbell discovered that stories across cultures share a universal structure. He coined this the hero's journey, and it follows a pattern that echoes in ancient legends, religions, and modern stories alike. In stage one, the hero is compelled to leave the ordinary world. He answers the call to adventure, meets a mentor along the way, and at some point he crosses over the threshold into the uncharted territory. There, he enters into stage two. We call this the initiation, wherein he faces trials and temptations. He glimpses the abyss, He figuratively dies and is reborn again. He achieves enlightenment and gains the insight he so desperately seeks. So with his ego dissolved and a new union with the divine, the hero returns home to us in stage three, bearing newfound wisdom or power. He's now the master of two worlds, with the freedom to live a fulfilled life. So my boy Campbell argued that the human psyche creates these stories, and that they reflect inner growth and spiritual transformation to give us hope and to help us find our bliss and align us with our deepest desires. These myths aren't just tall tales, they're roadmaps for living, passed down from generation to generation through sagas, fables, and legends. Now, I want to make it clear, neither Campbell nor I are making any theological claims or choosing sides here. We're just emphasizing symbolic meaning over historical fact or historical fiction. So what's the point here? The point is, I don't care what story you believe. So long as it helps you navigate life's challenges, you don't do harm to anyone else, and your version supports you in your unique journey to unlock the mysteries of life. I'm not certain if I truly believe any of them, but I don't not believe. I'm listening, and I remain hopeful that one day soon, we can all agree that no matter in what story you place your faith, you can recognize the common thread that unites all of us. We all suffer, and in our own ways, we're all trying to complete the same puzzle or decode the same message. We're just using alternate versions of the Rosetta Stone. Why are we here? What gives our lives meaning? Where are we all going? And really, what's the purpose? Okay, so now that the table is set, I'm really excited to begin connecting with all of you. The story of us will now begin full production. And I hope that the stories we tell together, you and me, will resonate. They'll resonate with you and, in small but impactful ways, help to alleviate your suffering and guide you closer to your truth. More to come. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for connecting with the story of us. As always, you can visit us on the World Wide Web at thestoryofusproject.com. You can also connect with me there and just hit the little Start the Conversation button. Send me a message, and we'll get you on the show. Peace be with you. Thanks again.